It's Chris-a-mania, brother.
That's a great question. Look at you, man, with the powerful questions.
This is the Chris Van Vliet Show.
Chris Van Vliet Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Van Vliet.
Welcome back to the friendly confines of the Chris Van Vliet Show. Thanks for being with us on this ride, on this audio adventure. This episode is brought to you by betonline.ag and Untuckit. And, oh man, what a good, good conversation this is with PCO. I mean, what a story he has. And if you're not inspired by the end of this podcast, if you're not inspired by this man's story, you may not be alive. Which is strange, because I know that you're listening right now. I know that you're very much alive. And I want to thank you, wherever, however you're listening. I'm imagining you're driving to work right now, maybe driving home from work, maybe you're at work, maybe you're getting that one last rep at the gym with the bicep curl. You got this. Maybe you're out walking the pup, the pepperoni pizza. That's what I like to call dogs, pepperoni pizzas. Wherever you're listening, snap a screenshot right now. Let me know. Let PCO know. I know that he would love to hear that you're listening to this. And thank you for leaving the reviews on Apple Podcasts, which leads us to our betonline.ag fan of the week. Betonline.ag is your online sportsbook expert. Use the promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, for a 50% welcome bonus. And I really can't thank you enough for these reviews. They help the podcast grow so much. And I really want the podcast to be as big as the YouTube channel is, which is continuing to grow. I mean, both are continuing to grow. We're going to get there, though. So thank you for continuing to make this a top 10 wrestling podcast in the world each and every week. And I'm going to keep reading one of these on each episode throughout 2020, because you are the fan of the week this week. It's Seahawk86 who says, passion, caring, and knowledge. Chris is not like other interviewers that give you what the companies want you to hear. He gives you what the fans want to hear, and that is honesty and a commitment to this great sport. It is people like Chris that give wrestling a chance at a great future. Give him a listen. You won't be disappointed. Well, thank you so much, Seahawk86. We're up to 662 reviews, the specific goal for the year, because you know that vague goals get vague results. The specific goal is 1,000 reviews, so we're getting close. I mean, it's only February, and we're 338 away. That was quick math there. So if you haven't done it yet, please take 7 seconds. Scroll down on Apple Podcasts, on your iPhone, on your iPad, however you're listening right now, if you're on Apple Podcasts. Scroll down, click those 5 stars. If you happen to have a few extra seconds, please just type a few words about the show like Seahawk86 did. So thank you so much for being our betonline.ag fan of the week. And you can use that promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, for your 50% welcome bonus at betonline.ag. And if you listen somewhere else, if you listen on Google or Spotify or Stitcher, I still love you. I appreciate you. It's just Apple Podcasts, the only place where you can leave a review. So what a guy PCO is. And at 52 years old, he is your Ring of Honor world champion. And his story is incredible. I mean, he's worked for every major promotion in wrestling. You probably know him best for his time in the WWF as a tag team, the Quebecers. And he's from Quebec. French is his first language. But there is so much more to him than just that. In fact, there was a point in his life where he didn't think that there was anything left in wrestling for him. So in 2012, he kind of quietly retired. And then he just completely reinvented himself. He missed wrestling so much. And he has one of the best stories in all of pro wrestling. Oh, man. I'm going to let him tell it to you. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's PCO. Well, there we go. And the Ring of Honor champion in the house. Literally in my house.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming here and thank you for making this happen.
Oh, I'm so delighted to be on your show. I wanted to be on it, and now it's going to be something done, I guess.
No, well, I'm glad that we were both available to make this happen. And the fact that you brought the title with you, too, that means a lot to me.
It means a lot to me, too.
I bet it does. I bet it does. What an incredible story that you have. And I think that 2019 was such an amazing year for you. How do you even top that in 2020?
The only way to top that is just to really get going, like what I always envisioned the PCO Monster Mania. Just getting crowd really excited, getting house packed, getting good ratings, good buy rates on pay-per-views, and just evolve, you know, just grow the whole PCO Monster Mania thing.
I mean, you just turned 52 years old.
Yeah.
Did you ever think you'd be holding a championship ever again?
It was part of the plan, at least, you know, but that's the thing, you know, every time I set up a goal and I have a vision about a goal, and I know deep down inside that that's what I want, and I will, no matter what, get there. Sometimes you do get discouraged on the way there, and sometimes you wonder how this is going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, that's a question I ask myself all the time. I know it's going to happen, but the roads, the way it goes, it's so crazy. There's so many hazards, so many ways that I never expected that it would happen that way. You know, like, I was always a big fan of you know, you gotta grind, you gotta work hard for what you want, and I was a big fan of those movies.
Yeah.
And I kind of created my own life, like the movies that I grew up watching.
Yeah, you're the hero of your own story. I mean, seriously.
I know I'm the main character of my life, though.
Not everybody is, though. There's a lot of people that are living for other people.
I don't know. I always look my life as a movie, and I'm the main character of my movie. Even though sometimes I go watch a hockey game, it's like the main character is going to watch a hockey game. He's just a spectator during the time that he's the main character of his life.
Sure.
So I always look at myself that way. And it's funny to finally be where I wanted to be, you know, like where I envisioned to be when I was 14 years old, when I had the young kid that had that dream in his heart, the burning desire that was there and that kept there and being there forever, like during all kinds of obstacles and setbacks and adversity. Sometimes it would take me a year or two to get back from a tough blow, but I always came back.
Well, you've wrestled everywhere. You've wrestled for every major promotion. And now you've really found a home in Ring of Honor. I feel like, you know, Ring of Honor, PCO, ROH, PCO, like you're a staple there now.
Yeah, I really feel good in there. I feel like it's like a home for me. It's very family-oriented. When I say family-oriented, I say we are treated as a family. It's a cliche in wrestling, oh, we're a big family and things like that. But yeah. Ring of Honor, I gotta say, when I got there the first night I was there and I was hearing things like that, but I saw things from my own eyes that proved to me that they really are a family. I saw people leaving for other companies. I saw people leaving for whatever reason, and we gathered all together. We wished them best of luck in their other endeavors. If somebody gets injured, you see that really family camaraderie.
Yeah.
Between, sometimes you have like a wall or you have like a distance between executive and office people and talent.
Yeah.
I don't feel that at Ring of Honor. Hmm. I feel like we all part of the boat. We all in the same family together. It's not too different, you know, the executive family and the talented like family and I feel like I like that environment.
When you came in, was the title even part of the discussion?
No. Never negotiated for the title, not even once during the whole year. Never, never, never. I mean, I would mention it sometimes on my Monday night PCO and Destro, on my social media.
Yeah.
I would mention it that it had been a goal since I was 14, but I never sat down with an executive at Ring of Honor and say, listen, I'm going to sign with you if the title's on the line.
Yeah, yeah.
Or if I get such amount of time with a title run or this or that.
Yeah.
I just went with the flow. Basically, I went like, I'm going to just prove myself what I can do.
Was it really Joey Janela's spring break that put PCO on the map?
He was a big... It was a big influencer for sure.
Yeah, I feel like everyone points to that match with Walter and goes, I feel like we were sleeping on this guy.
That was the big thing. But one thing, you have to rewind a little bit. Ethan Page. The way it started, I did like something on YouTube. I was doing like commentary after a pay-per-view or, you know, predictions or posts, you know, post analyzing
like, yeah,
pay per view, and then like I got a call from someone who wanted to use me as a wrestler, and then I said, "Well, yeah, maybe that sounds good." So I went, and I really took that very seriously, and had a killer match there. And then someone from Indiana called Michael Blanton, who runs Indiana Black Label Pro Wrestling in Indiana. Called me up and says, I got a date for you, either on 2018, January 13th or April 21st. And I knew I wanted to be at WrestleMania for April, so I had to choose January 13th. But I knew I was not going to be as prepared as I was hoping to be prepared for the 13th, because right. I had just worked a few matches before prior to that.
Yeah.
But I gambled on myself on that one. My flight didn't want to leave, like, because it was a big snowstorm in Montreal.
Oh, wow.
We were grounded for 5-6 hours. I showed up at the show 15 minutes before bell time.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was wrestling Ethan Page. And we had a killer match. And Joey was standing. He was in the audience. He was wrestling on that show, but watching me perform in the audience. And on the way back to the hotel, Joey asked me if I wanted to be part of the spring break.
And I feel like when people saw the match on the card, Walter versus PCO, they're going, well, Walter, huge indie name. PCO, the guy from the Quebecers? Like, what kind of match is that?
Yeah, exactly.
But then you blew everyone away. That was, everyone talks about that. That was the match of WrestleMania weekend.
Yeah, it took a long time during the match. You know, I when I was introduced, it was cold as hell. I mean, I heard a little like chant because I had just cut a deck of cards, you know, with Destro. I did like 3 promo videos for Walter, so they kind of got over. So I had a little chant, cut the deck. But that was it. Like, it was like super cold. And until like halfway in the match, we started trading like chops, like from corner to corner and back and forth. And
yeah.
I started to hit like big moves, like moonsault on the outside, the spring legged moonsault, the senton, and I got powerbombed through a table. All tons of things that we did, me and Walter. And then as soon as we started like the trade, because my chest was like, you know,
oh, it's
you,
like you purple.
Know, yeah, yes, purple, green, all, and black.
Yes, I've taken some chops recently.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's still bruised.
And my chest is like so battered, like so all kinds of colors. I wouldn't feel even the thing. Like, I was so pumped for that match. I was so pumped up. Like, I didn't even care.
So at what point did you really catch on? So that match was great. You won the crowd over.
Yeah.
Did you start getting bookings immediately after?
Yeah, right after.
Wow.
I really popped up like crazy. I became the poster boy for all the indie companies in the States, like Canada as well. But
yeah,
I did most of my booking I took in the States. I did like probably every single company. That was the main event.
And it's incredible because at the time you were 50, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a lot of wrestlers that turn 50 and they're like, that's it, like one more match, or, you know, I'm done. 50's like the new 40 or maybe 30, because, well, you're the champion of Ring of Honor. There's another champion right now in his 50s in AEW. Billy Gunn's still tearing it up in his 50s. I feel like you still have so much more in the tank.
Yeah, I feel like that too. And I think that what fuels me, it's my goals. You know, it's like if I would have come back and wrestle without a plan or without a goal or without knowing where I wanted to go, I think it would just be a guy wrestling in his 50s, but I had a plan. I knew where I was going, and I was willing to pay the price and make the sacrifices.
I love it. I always say vague goals get vague results, and you had a very specific goal.
Oh, yeah. I really wanted to become a world champion for a major organization. That was the main goal. Originally, when I was at... I was at All In, but I couldn't do All In because I was booked at Chikara a long time ago, like 3 months prior to that. So I guess we never really had any discussion about that. But
were at All In?
Yeah, I got booked like with Destro. We did like a demonstration, a demo, a strength demo, and all sorts of PCO and Destro things. And it got really over.
Yeah.
And I had to fly back in the afternoon to make the show in Philly and get there on time and make that tournament, the Kings of Trio tournament.
So. Was there ever a discussion after doing All In that maybe you'd be part of AEW?
Yeah, it was a few discussions. I think I could have been part of AEW, but at the end of the day, Ring of Honor is, to me, I had committed myself with them. And they had been really, really professional. Like I've never seen like anything like that. Maybe one time, the first time I got hired by WWE, maybe it was cool, but it wasn't as cool as the way that they showed me how they really wanted to sign PCO. I was invited to the office, and they showed me the dojo, showed me Sinclair, and met with Joe Koff and Greg and Delirious Hunter, and met with everybody at the office, and then we discussed the deal and everything like that. And then once I shook hands in my mind, it was hard to go back on a commitment. I'm the type of guy, if I commit myself to a goal,
Or
if I tell you I'm gonna do your I'm gonna be on your show.
Wake up at 2 a.m, I believe.
Yeah. I'll respect my words. And
I was talking to Ring of Honor about like I'll fly to Montreal and do the interview with PCO, and they're like, no, we'll fly him to you. And I'm like, great, sure. I'm glad that we're able to make this happen.
Yeah,
so
awesome.
You're a man of your word. And obviously, Ring of Honor is now building around you. Like, you're one of the top stars.
Yeah, well, there's a few. I think my goal is to, like I said, you know, to really grow, help get the company get known, like, more in Canada, more in the United States. Performing in the ring at a high level, but also performing outside the ring. As the marketer, or one of the marketer and marketing, ROH is a top wrestling company. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm doing it almost every TV shows that I can get on. I was invited by the Montreal Canadiens. I was invited by their farm clubs, the Laval Rockets, for the 100 games. So it was sold out at 12,000 people there.
Wow.
I was invited by the Boston Bruins farm team club. I do all of them, you know. I make so many good contacts. I meet so many great people along the journey, the road. It's been fantastic.
Well, I think what's so amazing about the story is in 2011, you were retired.
Yeah.
So, first of all, what was the decision going into the retirement? And then what was the decision going into coming out of retirement?
Well, I think 2005,
to 2008, I was a TV commentator in France for TNA. And I was making great money. I was on TV every week, and I had it easy, kind of. And after 3 years, I had a good chemistry with my partner also, who was a live ring announcer for Vince McMahon at one point.
Oh, wow.
When they were doing shows in Canada, Mark Blondin. Very good ring announcer, very good commentator and everything. He's very talented, did a lot of radio shows and things like that. So I told him one day, I said, Mark, I said, I'm going to quit the job. He said, what? I said, you're the best partner I ever had, and you're quitting over, like, basically no reason? I said, yeah, I'm quitting over a reason. When I was 14, I wanted to become a world champion. I didn't want to commentate on the world champions, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So I said to him, I feel like I'm not at my place. You know, I'm having fun. It's a great job, but I'm too young for this.
You know? And you quit to do what?
Yeah, well, the producer of the show brought me in the office. He says, are you serious? You want to quit this job? I said, yeah. So I'll tell you what. I'm going to hire someone for 3 months. I was going to England on the indie scenes, and I wanted to meet Vince McMahon overseas, showing that I'm not just a guy from Montreal showing up at the Montreal Bell Centre. Hey, I want a job back, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm busy on the road. I'm doing the indies. I'm there in Birmingham. I'm there in London. Mm-hmm. I'm there. Every show that they were in England, I showed up. I had like a few tryouts, and that was the reason. And when he asked me if I wanted to have a 3 months, you know, break so I could try it, and if it doesn't work, you have your job back. And I said, Robert, if I do, that's because I don't believe in myself. If I do believe in myself, I'm going to say I hire someone else.
Yeah.
And that's what I said, and that's what I did. And everything that I've done in England and everything that I've tried, I failed all over the place. After I had a good match, it was, now creative, they don't have anything for you. Or, we don't have anything for you. And then eventually, I was in touch with John Laurinaitis a few more times over the phone, and I was doing some show around Lewiston and the New Jersey area, and he says, come to the office, we'll talk. And that was in 2009, I think, or 2008. And he says, just choose a week in July, and we'll get you a Raw and a SmackDown, and we'll give you a good worker, good giant, very good chance to shine and to show what you can do.
Yeah.
So I had to shoot an angle for me and Shawn Michaels for WrestleMania. So I'm going out for my match. I got the gorilla position. You got like Shawn Michaels, Vince McMahon, John Laurinaitis, a lot of agents, Pat Patterson's there, everybody's there. And the match didn't go the way I thought, and I had to fight the whole day. I came in with like a kind of a Kyokushin MMA kind of gimmick, you know. And Vince was really competing against UFC at that time, so I had a nice, very sharp zigzag blonde mohawk. I came out, the crowd was really up for it. I had a hell of a look. But on that look, they made me shave my head before I go out. Vince, he said to John Laurinaitis, I think that looks like, that haircut looks like a job guy. So so John said, I'm going to make you, make a favor for you. I'm going to make you shave your head. So I was kind of off guard, you know, just before going for my match. You know, it's a slap in the face because you're all pumped and now they're shaving your head and going. And
right.
Well, there must be something they don't like in my look. So I came back from the match, and then John said, what did you think of your match? And I said, well, I think it was just very so-so. So I had like two good moves that really popped out the crowd, but I don't think it was... that great. So he said, don't even bother doing like SmackDown tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
You can just take that car if you don't want to sleep. Or just, anyways, just take the car, just drive it back to Montreal. We were at Mulligan Sun Arena in Connecticut. And I drove back home to Montreal.
And that was the end of your tryout.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I have so many other stories between me and Vince. Very cool stories, that insane stories. I mean, one time I think it was in 2003, I had a hell of a match. The whole Bell Center is chanting my name, creative. They called me like 2 weeks after, he had nothing for me. 2005 is supposed to wrestle a guy, but the guy wanted to have like a 12-minute match. They wanted me to go over in a 5-minute match, so I ended up like basically nothing. And then between, I guess, my tryout, the one that went wrong, and 2011, I showed up at the Bell Center. And then I was talking to John a few times during the night, and he was going crazy all over the place, didn't have much time for me.
Yeah.
So I decided to wait for Vince, because I was a 3-time World Tag Team Champion.
Yeah, of course.
So he, and you know, he would call me on my phone sometimes, you know, when I was like on my peak and everything was doing well. So I'm waiting. At the end, there's no more wrestlers, it's only myself. I've been there since 11 in the morning. So it's about 1 a.m. in the morning. I go to the Vince dressing room.
Yeah.
So, two big, huge bodyguard. It's so huge, like 6'7", 6'6", 350 each. They're immense. So yeah, can you tell that Pierre Carbonell's there and I would like to talk to Vince? So one guy gets in the room, he gets back out. He says, Vince has left. He's not here anymore. I know where the Bell Center is. No back door. You're in the dressing room. Yeah. You can't leave. You know, I was there when he got in. There's no way.
Right.
Out.
Yeah.
So I wait. Vince coming out of the dressing room. I go, hey, Vince, the bodyguards, they jumped me. They got me by the throat and everything. They're ready to kill. And Vince goes, no, guys, stop. Hey, Carl, how are you, my friend? What can I do for you? And then I was kind of choked up a little bit, like, you want to speak, but you just, you know, went through so much. And then I was totally taken off my guard, you know. So I said, no, I'd like to come back and work for you. He said, talk to John about that. I said, okay, that's what I've been trying to do all night in my mind.
Yeah.
I said, yeah, that's good. So basically I had like, you know, a lot of setbacks and failure like that, big ones. So to be able to, at 50 years old, to get that call from Joey Janela. And they didn't have the money to pay my trans, and I decided to drive there. So it was 40 hours to get there in Louisiana and 40 hours to get back in Montreal. Because I was not organized at the time with GPS and things like that. I wasn't doing much road. So I just kind of say, okay, Florida's 25 left. So Louisiana's going to be I-95 to the right, you know, so it's about the same time, but it wasn't at the same time, and I probably got lost a few times in different roads and things like that. So it took me 40 for a 25-minute match. So I had to be convinced that that match was going to lead me somewhere else. Otherwise, I wouldn't have done it.
Did you get paid for the match?
Yeah.
Okay, so you got paid for the match. You drive yourself 20 hours there, 20 hours back.
40. 40 hours.
Oh, sorry, 40 each way?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, no sleep. Because if I was going to sleep for 8 hours, I was going to, you know, getting there only the morning of the show, and it would have been a bad day for me. So I wanted to have a night of sleep, so I didn't sleep.
Now, if you don't mind me asking, what did you get paid for the show? Because I want to put this out there that you were willing to do all of this work for probably not a lot of money in the indies.
Yeah. That's probably around $300.
Okay, so you drove 40 hours each way for $300, which likely didn't cover your gas or your hotel, all because you knew that maybe, possibly...
I was sure. So it was not a maybe.
Okay.
It was, what? This is going to turn my career. This is the match that's going to turn
What
my
made
career.
You so sure?
Well, when I was talking to Joey in the car after the match with Ethan, he was telling me how big Walter was on the indie scenes. Mm-hmm. And then when I got back home, January, February, March, I had like 3 months, you know, to check out on Walter. So I knew he was red hot. I just knew that it was going to be that moment, because I had been waiting for a moment like that all my career. It had to be this one. I thought that so many times before. But that time I was very, very convinced, very sure of myself that if everything happened that way, the way that I connected with Joey, the way that my match went with Heaton, the way that I got kind of scouted by Black Label Pro, that had to be it. Had to be it. You know?
Right. So let's take it back a little bit. 2011, you were pretty much done with wrestling.
For those reasons.
So many
slap in the face. And the last time that I drove from Connecticut back to Montreal, that I didn't even have the chance to do the second show. I'm driving my car back home, and I'm telling myself, I'm kind of pissed too. I'm not in a good mood for sure, but I'm telling myself something good's gonna come out of that. Mm. But I don't know when, and I don't know why, and how it's gonna happen, and I don't know when. But I knew something good had to come out of that if I didn't quit.
So what did you do for work from 2011 until you got back onto the indie scene?
Yeah, I worked in bars. I did bounce, and then I did, I made a pretty good living at it, you know, but it's obviously something that I didn't like.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably where I was the weakest on my first run. You know, I always was a lady guy. And I think that kind of fulfilled a need. Like, it was a place for me where, you know, I was constantly, you know, talking to beautiful girls and things like that. And
right.
It's a certain standard, you know. And, you know, it gave me some freedoms because I was working like four days a week, and I had like 3 days off, so I could train all the time. And
yeah.
I was booking, basically.
So you talk about how you had a great relationship with Vince, and you were able to, you know, speak with him, have these auditions, these tryouts over many years. Did this incident with the Click leave a bad taste in their mouth or blackball you or anything like that?
No, because the match the angle that I was shooting for Sean, actually it was supposed to end up that package in England. I was supposed to give it to John Laurinaitis, but John Laurinaitis couldn't show up that day, so I had nobody to go and end them my package for the scenario that I...
This was in 2009?
Yeah, that was over in England.
Okay.
And so many things happened because I had my daughter also in between. Like a girlfriend, and so my daughter is 11 and her name is London. But yeah, so I gave my package, I gave it to Shawn Michaels basically, and he promised me that he was going to give it to Vince. And he gave it to him, because that's why I got the phone call from John Laurinaitis after that for those tryouts.
Right.
But the match wasn't like a good, it was not a good fit for me. I mean, when I went to the tryout, and nobody liked the gimmick that I had. Nobody. I remember I was talking to Ricky Steamboat during the day. He was the agent of the match. He did not see anything good through it. You know, to any ideas I was coming for, I was going against the tide. That's one lesson that I've learned also. Go with the tide. Don't go against the tide. Mm. I mean, be relentless. Be focused. Don't quit. But when something gets in your way in a form where it's obvious that you can't change anything, go with it.
Yeah.
You know, just don't be, you know, stubborn to the... That's what I did, and that I learned a great life lesson there.
So if we dive into the situation with Kevin Nash in this thing with the Click, how much did that affect your career at the time?
Badly.
So it's, you know, you were supposed to, it was supposed to be a count out, right? Was the original?
No, the story is like, we usually for TV shows or house shows, we always get the finish in the afternoon from the agent or whoever. And a month before the Montreal show, which was a house show for the title against Kevin, he came up to me and very arrogant. And he said, it's going to be a big knife, big boob jackknife, 1, 2, 3 in Montreal. And I was fuming.
Of course. Yeah.
No, it's not going to happen like that. So when the show arrived and the show comes in Montreal, and then Tony Garea comes to me, more like a 10-12 minute match, and we'll put Big Kev, you know, the champ over, big boot, jackknife. I said, no, no way. I'm not doing it.
Because it's your hometown?
Sort of. It's a long story. There's okay. So many stories and stories. He had started the year before with Shawn Michaels, where I didn't want to put him over, but I ended up putting him over in the match.
Right.
And just the fact that I said, no, I don't think it's a good idea, but I said, no, finally I will do it. It's all right. I think that had like just put enough to get a bad taste on myself. And then I was undefeated for 8 months at Jean-Pierre Lafitte. And Kevin and Sean were good friends. So I think the fact that it came back to Montreal where I had that little altercation with Sean just came back to haunt me because they really put a lot of grease on the on the machinery there to make me bite on it. And I did bite like crazy. I said no. I said, if I'm going to do a job here tonight, I'm just taking my bag and going home. You won't have a main event. There's no main event tonight. I'm leaving.
Why did it matter so much? It's just a house show.
No, that wasn't for the... That was the principle. That wasn't for the show. For the show, I didn't care. I would have put him over 1,000 times. It was just the fact that he called it to me a month before the show.
Right.
If I would have showed up in Montreal and they would have said, okay, of course, Kevin is the champ. We want to put him over. I would have said, yeah, no problem.
Yeah.
But the fact that they ribbed me with it, it's the rib that I didn't like.
Right.
It's the rib that I really went crazy for. And the first little thing that happened with Sean, I had still Jacques in my, Jacques wanted to go to WCW. I wanted to stay with WWE. And then when he knew that I was wrestling Sean, he was saying, they're going to make you lose again. And then I got worked up. And with Sean, I wasn't sure because I was only like 25 years old. So I was like, well, should I listen to someone who's got experience or should I listen to Vince, who's a boss and tells everybody what they want to hear?
Right.
So I was kind of confused. And so it created a little altercation with Sean that came back to haunt me a year later. But it wasn't about doing the jobs. It was like maybe 5,000 people there.
Right.
I don't think that was the big factor. The big factor was the fact that months prior to that, he came to me and he said, in Montreal, in your hometown, it's going to be a big boot, and jackknife, 1, 2, 3.
And you ended up walking out of the match, right?
No, we did a double count out. Change of finish.
Okay, double count out.
Yeah.
And then where did things go from there for you?
The end of the match was really stiff because it sold out at the curtain. Everybody's expecting a fight. So, and the next night we're in Quebec City, and then it was tough. And then eventually I decided to go to WCW, and then by the time I got booked by WCW, Kevin Nash and Scott Hall had made their move there.
Yeah.
So that cut me off there right away.
Right, so it was like kind of...
So that's why it was a hard time from 1996, 95, 96, from that night on with Kevin and all the way to I worked against him back in 2001, I think. He came back to Montreal and worked against me and put me over.
Was there any heat with him then?
No. And I remember his friends, they were telling him, don't go to Montreal. It's a big trap shot there. They're going to beat you up. They're going to this and that. And Kevin said, ah, come on. It was so many years ago. And we hang out together. And after a match, we hung out. And we had so much fun. And I learned so much about the business from Kevin. He was like a different guy. And like today, I would say he's a good friend of mine.
Wow. I remember you talking in another interview where obviously, you know, you were upset about that situation and you had written down all the things you didn't like about them.
Yeah. I everybody that I hated, everybody that I thought that, you know, things that I didn't like about people in the wrestling business and around my life circle. And I was reading that. I was writing that down. And then as I was reading every single thing, it hit me like a ton of brick, like everything that I wrote down about other people's. You know, it was probably everything that I was myself.
Wow.
And that's really humbling.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, of realizing the things that you don't like about other people.
It was a mirror effect.
Yeah, the things you don't like about yourself.
Yeah.
So what changed from that point?
I changed my side, changed my inside, try to change the way I was dealing with people, trying to be a better person, personal development. Basically, I started to work on myself, and I knew that the success would come only by kind of killing my ego and so to speak, you know, and just be generous, be myself, and work on the, you know, the basic qualities of a human being. You know, like it's not hard, you know, not to get anger. It's bad, you know, to be angry all the time, to be mad all the time. For so it's really deep down and a profound change that I made about myself. It's a long, long journey. I've been working on myself since that year, you know, 2000. And it's been a process. And I feel like, you know, each and every year I'm learning more things and more things. It's a never-ending process, you know. You never get there, but you always, every day, get the best version of yourself. Mm-hmm. Try to be the best version of yourself and working out. But I started with the, you know, setting up. I had set up goals for my life, but I started to set up goals for every day, set up goals for every week. You know, let's say if I was stuck in traffic, let a car go by in front of me, you know, open a door for someone. Little things that I was just thinking about myself before. Come on, move out of the way. It's me. Close the door in front of someone. You don't care. Cut the line.
Yeah.
You're late for an interview or something. Go on the shoulder. Cut right in front of everybody. You know, I was doing things like that, you know.
That's, yeah.
And I was like, without knowing it, you know, like I was always brought up good. But when I reached the WWE, the fame, the success, the money, my account changed, my bank account changed overnight, you know. I think my first check in WWE, like $15,000 for 3 days of work, you know?
That's incredible.
So you're going from being broke to that amount of money.
Yeah.
Plus the royalty checks and everything. And then eventually you just start thinking you're better than everybody. You know, my mom would say, well, go eat to that restaurant today. So, oh, I don't like those people. I'm better than them.
You know?
So I had reached out to a point where, you know, everything that happened to me happened for a reason. I was the instigator of that. And at first I was putting the blame on Kevin, putting the blame on Sean, putting the blame on Vince, putting the blame on everybody else. And when I switched that away, and then I became very humble and
What a super interesting chat with PCO. We'll take a quick time out right now to thank our sponsor for this episode, Untuck It. And if you ever see an untucked button down, they look bad. Yeah. Why? Well, because they're not meant to be worn that way. Thankfully, there's Untuck It, the original button-down shirt that's actually designed to be worn untucked. It doesn't matter what your size or your shape is, Untuck It shirts always fall at the exact perfect untucked length. They've got more than 50 fit combinations, and Untuck It shirts look great whether you're tall, you're short, you're slim, you're athletic, you're husky, whatever you want to be. You can choose from styles like wrinkle-free button-downs, super soft flannels, outerwear, and more. And with Untuck It, your shirts will never look baggy, they'll never look bulgy or too long or too big ever again. The best thing about this is their website is super easy to use. They even have a whole web page devoted to helping you find your perfect fit. So whether you're shopping for a gift or maybe you're just trying to shop for a gift for yourself and make yourself look better, Untuck It is the way to go. Visit untuckit.com. Use the code BLUE for a 20% off deal at checkout. That's Untuckit, UNTUCKIT.com. The promo code is BLUE for 20% off.
Well, you realize the common denominator in all of that was you.
Yeah, and I had to grow my qualities and reduce my my bad sides or the things that I was... was a pain in the ass, but, you know.
It sounds like you just became kinder.
Yeah, kinder, more wisdom, I would say.
Yeah.
But I was always a big reader. You know, I always read, trying to find out what do I need to make it. read, listen.
Well, what books have really inspired your life?
Yeah, The Alchemist from Paulo Coelho.
It's classic.
It's classic, but it's my life, too, because... every single thing that I did and that had led to this championship, every single experience, the bar, the TV commentator, the run with Vince, the hard time to make it to Vince first, knowing that what it need, you know, even if it's hard, it's hard, eventually it's going to pay off.
Yeah.
I knew that. And it's like in The Alchemist, every job that he's doing in a way to achieving his goal to go to the pyramids, it always brings and adds an arrow to his set, you know, add a tool to his kit. Mm-hmm. And that's when I was there in 2010 for wrestling at the pyramids. I went to wrestle in Egypt.
Wow.
And actually, I met Caprice Coleman there. And we were wrestling on resorts there, and it was like 4 or 5 hours away from the airport. But I decided that at the end of the tour, that was no matter what, I was going to the pyramid. Hmm. And I went to a site where Barack Obama was doing his speech when he went there to Cairo. And when you look at all the 9 pyramids from that site, it's breathtaking, you know. You just, it's so beautiful. You just like you cannot not be in the moment. You're one with the pyramids. You know, you're part of the pyramids. You're part of the, and that experience itself was another big starting movement for me to say. Well, how can my favorite book that's about, you know, reaching the best of yourself, and it happens in the Pyramid of Egypt, I'm here right now. Well, right. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
What are the chances that you're going to fly 14 hours straight to Egypt for a wrestling tour without learning an experience there? You know, I knew it wasn't about wrestling. I knew it was about something about myself.
Mm. And so that's the book that's impacted your life the most.
That's one of them, but there's many.
Are you still, like, you're constantly reading now?
Well, now instead of reading, I use my my earphones and I listen to a lot of YouTube channels, the audiobooks.
Sure. You have a YouTube channel.
Yeah. I use a lot of audiobooks, though, but I read too. I like to read airplanes, Sometimes reading also is different than listening. So, but I do both.
Yeah.
I read a lot.
By the way, we'll link up to your YouTube channel down below in the pinned comments so people can subscribe to your channel. You're putting a lot of your insane workouts on there.
Yeah. That's one of my babies there. Like the all those videos, me and Destro, the strength videos, the theatrical videos.
You're lighting yourself on fire.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff. I mean, you gotta, people gotta check on that channel because it's growing. Also, like I'm just putting a video. I'm not putting a lot of. I'm putting descriptions, but I'm not putting a lot of words, like saying wrestling or this or that. Like, how do you call that? Those words?
Like search terms?
Yeah, search terms.
Keywords?
I'm not
hashtags? Well, you should.
Yeah, maybe.
I can give you some help here.
but at least I'm regular. Like, you got a video every Monday. Every Monday night, you got a video, and sometimes you got extra videos during the week.
Good. Okay.
So that's constant. It's been we're approaching our the 100th, number 100 video.
That's great.
Which is going to be a special one, a special edition for the 100.
With so many people knowing you early on in your career as a tag team wrestler, did you always envision yourself as a single star?
I had to become a world champion.
That's true.
So in my mind, it was like really, I really liked the way that Brett had done his way up, the tag, the Intercontinental and the world title.
Yeah.
But mine's been different. But like you said, 2019, the ROH tag, the ROH World Six-Man Tag, the Crockett Cup, the NWA tag, the world championship title. So it's kind of the same journey, sort of, but Brett was all in WWE, but I wanted to be a tag first and then Intercontinental and then world champ. That's what I had in mind.
And when they approached you that you were going to be part of Villain Enterprises, what was your reaction to that?
I was really happy because the word that I was looking for was synchronicity. It's been just since 2017. My whole life's been synchronicity.
Yeah, it's like you're in alignment now.
Yeah, I mean, I met Marty in the year that I was in England for the whole time trying to get in touch with WWE.
Yeah.
I met Marty and Nick Aldis there.
Oh, wow.
They were just young boys starting up.
Yeah.
And I was good to them, and I guess from what Nick told me, Marty really appreciated the fact that I had been good to them compared to other like veterans who were like more harder or jerks or whatever the terms are.
Yeah.
I was always cool. And then when I was read out on the indie, Marty had the idea to start his own enterprises. And called me up, and then eventually the company called me up, and then I was really open about it because I knew Marty from England.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I thought that year was down the drain. Now that year is just saving my butt there.
That's so funny. That's so funny how it came back around.
Yeah, it came back around like I never imagined. And then the other thing is Walter. When I got to wrestle Walter, he said, Carl, you don't remember me, but we wrestled together before. No way. I said, yeah, I just broke in. I was 18 at 16 Carat in Germany, a 16 Carat tournament. So we worked together in a 3-on-3.
Wow.
And that kind of created that little chemistry, that little spark that we needed to get our match, that to get a kick-ass match.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it kind of works back ways. When in alignment, I like your word that you use, I'm in alignment. And so things from the past are helping me out now. Like Marty is calling me up. And then I met also Nick on the road and then started. And I had the tour 2018 with Brody King. So I was a good friend. We had a good chemistry. We had a good feud. We had good matches against each other. So for me, Marty, Brody King, what can I ask better?
Well, it's so cliche to say it, but everything happens for a reason. And it's funny how you might not know what that reason is in the moment.
Yeah.
Or even a year or two later.
Yeah.
But it's amazing these connections that you made a decade ago.
It's crazy.
Are now coming back around to help you now.
Yeah.
That also just goes to show, also sounds cliche, but be kind to everybody.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because you never know. Like, Marty's now booking Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
How much has that changed, for you?
The only thing that changed a little bit with Marty was like the fact that for a while we didn't know what he was going to do, and I didn't feel like I should ask him, Marty, are you going to stay or are you going to leave? I didn't think it was appropriate to ask him something like that. And he never asked me what I was going to do. And I think nobody was asking me because I was talking to Flip sometime, and he said, it's kind of... said, I don't know if you're resigning. I don't know if Marty's resigning. We don't know nothing. Yeah. It was like a tough time. So I felt for a little while, I didn't know, like, I wasn't going to end up by myself. Was Marty going to All Elite Wrestling? What was going to happen, you know? Mm. And we had a lot of interrogations, like, and then I was just focusing as much as I could on what I could control and not trying to think about what I cannot control. And that's why I think that's one of the philosophy that I decided to embrace also when I decided to change myself. You know, I was like going against the tide, trying to worry about things that I didn't have any control over.
Yeah.
And now I'm making all the efforts and putting the focus on everything that I can control and then trying to let life just happen, you know.
And I think one of the most interesting parts about all of this is English isn't your first language.
Not at all.
So that's another obstacle that you had to overcome.
It was, yeah. But I at a young age, but I think also it helps me find my character now at my age. I think at one point, like 25, 26, 27, not being the first language, you're trying to... What style am I going to have if I have a live ring interview or if I have to be charismatic or I have to, you know, do something? Because I've done like so many interviews over the last 2 years that I found my way, like I just need to be myself.
Do you still...
The guy that I am.
Do you still have to search for English words? Like, well, I imagine
I have my own vocabulary. If in my mind I want to say a word and it doesn't come, I'll use synonymous, you know.
Synonyms. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're not like.
Or if I don't know the word, I'll just make it like I did a synonymous.
Synonymous is a word.
That's me. That's my own style, you know.
Do you still think in French?
No. No, it goes in English.
Okay.
I think in English.
But you process the words in English.
Oh yeah, everything's in English.
Okay, because I know some people process it in their native language. No. Then this is what I mean.
It would be too long. It would be too confusing.
No, I remember another person from your area, George St. Pierre.
Yeah. I think he's. His English is different than mine. You know?
His English was terrible at first.
I didn't want to say that.
At first, his English was terrible. Yeah. And he's really worked on it. Yeah. He's gotten better.
And he made tons of money for USC.
Of course he did. Did you ever take any professional classes to learn English?
Not at all. I learned everything on the road.
So you taught yourself English?
Yeah. I learned from being around the people. I mean, wow. I remember my first letters that I was writing for Stampede Wrestling. My friend, high school, he was really good, like almost bilingual. So I would have him to write my letters to Stu Hart or Bruce Hart, and I would send him with a decent English because he was helping me out. Or if I was calling Stu, he would be in front of me, and we were both listening, and he was telling me to say, I want to say this. And then I said, it was like a... Before I was answering, it was like a time, you know, because he had to translate to me and then I had to answer back to Sue, and I don't think it helped me out at all.
But you somehow figured it out and you learned.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, it was a lot of, mistakes and error and learning from them. And I don't know, I had it the hard way, though, learning on the road. It was tough because... sometimes if you find someone who speaks French and you start speaking French with him, mm-hmm. well, the rest of the group think that you're talking about them, so yeah. We have to speak in English between each other, but we both don't speak very good English. So it made it like sometimes, I remember we were over in England, and I was there in 91 for Brian Dixon, and for 4 or 5 hours, me and my partner were both French-Canadian, and we're talking French in the back, and I think Vince Finlay and Dave Taylor on the front, and in the front, I mean, they were red hot when we got out of the car.
Right.
And I learned from other wrestlers, and then we never did that again, but we didn't know better. I mean, we were 20 years old. We were having fun. We were in England. We were our first, no, second pro athlete. Well, we met in the Maritimes where I got fired after 30 days, and then I decided to go to England, and then we really made the main event there. We're like we're working Robbie Brookside and Doug Dean every night, Dave Taylor and Stephen Regal and all the top guys from England. We're working with them on main events all the night. Every night we're the top tag team there in 91, 92, and then I went for Otto Vance. Otto, like, really booked me, like, one of the top guys with Peter Williams. I think I almost won a tournament in Hanover and Bremen. I finished fourth, Hanover finished fifth, like, 21, 22 guys on the tournament. They pushed me hard. Mm. And that led me to go to Puerto Rico for Carlos, and then I was a main eventer there. I was working Jose Gonzalez and Carlos himself, and then Abdullah the Butcher sometimes. And then that's when I met Jacques in 93. And then as soon as I went for a tryout, and as soon as we debuted in the WWE, it was like we got the straps. Like I think it was like started in June, and then September 13th. 1993, we got the tag team.
I love that you know the date.
Yeah, because it was like really an important date for me.
Yeah, well,
September 13th, the tag straps, and the world title December 13th.
There you go.
I had to be a monster.
Lucky number 13.
I had to be a monster.
Now, if this is everything, you know, leading up to this point, well, I mean, we talked about it at the start of the interview, but what's the plan for 2020? You're so goal-driven, so what's the goal?
Yeah, it's, like I said, sounds cliche, but I was trying to find every word possible. Like, I've tried maybe fever, maybe, you know, different words for something that... be inclusive with the big craziness that's going around with what's happening with PCO, and the only thing I could come up with was the PCO Monster Mania monster, because it's going to be so big, and monster because it's monstrous, and also like growing up, being 14, Hulk Hogan was the man, and I always said to myself, I wanted to be the next Hulk Hogan. So it's like paying tribute to someone that I really admire a lot for what he did and the way he did it, and everything that Dave accomplished, him and Vince together, because I think they were working a lot together back then. And I think... as of now, Ring of Honor is not a global, you know, like 30 riders and I don't know how many, you know, people working around. And
right.
It's still like family, you know, not that many people involved in the process. So I think it's really to pop Ring of Honor big time. I mean... we have all the ingredients to pop, and that's the goal. It's to pop Ring of Honor.
Well, and now's the time to do it.
I always said, you know, I wanted to be the next Hulk Hogan. I wanted to pop a territory like Joe LeDuc did in Tennessee, like Hogan did in WWE in the 80s. And so that's what drives me.
Hmm. Well, now's the time to do it.
Yeah.
Wrestling's red hot right now.
Yeah.
Was there ever a point, because your story is about like perseverance and not giving up on yourself, was there ever a point where you went, I don't think this is going to be possible anymore.
2011 was the year when I had that radio interview, and a guy was asking me, what's up with your wrestling career? That's pretty much over, I think. That's what the retirement comes from.
Yeah, okay.
It was not an official retirement. I never made a press conference. I never had a retirement match. I never wanted to say I was going to retire because I knew I didn't accomplish what I wanted to accomplish.
Yeah.
But you know what? By saying that to that radio announcer, it made me let go a little bit.
Hmm.
It made me all the efforts and all the things that I had put in. Maybe sometimes when you want something that much, instead of pulling it, you're pushing it with wanting it too much.
Yeah.
And maybe I was not doing the right things at the right times. Maybe I needed a break, you know, to refocus. And it just, it's so weird, you know. Like when I was doing those commentary for the YouTube channels, like, just prior to that, I was not doing much, you know. I was doing guys with comedy, you know. I was doing a little bit like you're doing. I was having them, and I was asking questions about, you know, the humorous, you know, where you started, where you're going, and things like that.
Yeah.
And then the guy came to me and says, oh, you're not at your place at all. He says, you should be doing that with wrestling, not with those guys.
Yeah.
It's not you. And then this guy was in my life for all the... He came home twice or three times. He set me up with my Twitter, not even my Twitter. He restarted a new YouTube account with wrestling on it and started the whole thing. And now you got to go wrestling. And it's just something that someone that I knew from where I go to get my things print out and photocopy and things like that, just to another person. Just someone that happened to be in my life for just one reason.
Wow.
Put me right back in the wrestling
direction. Yeah. Wow.
Because in my mind, I didn't know I was going to make it back there.
And well, now that you're doing this, and you're doing it obviously at the top level, what's the plan here? Like, how much longer do you think you can do this?
Well, like I said, said that to many to other shows and hosts before. It's not about the time. It's about the achievement. Once I'll be achieving what I've started, you know, a great run, you know, like a solid run, like it would, good crowds, good buy rates, good gates, you know, something like pretty spectacular, not something ordinary, something unbelievable, something that you cannot even think about. You know? Once that will be reached, then it'll be time to step up to the next thing.
Are you? He's never given up. You really aren't human.
Yeah.
Well, are you afraid that your body might give out on you?
No.
Because, I mean...
Not the way I train with Destro.
But the way that you wrestle, though. Like, there's not too many people that are, first of all, doing moonsaults, period. Not a lot of people doing moonsaults at 52 years old.
And I do a lot of crazy bumps.
Yes.
I think I got to show during the match that I'm not human. I think that's part of the deal, you know. That's part of how can he do this? And it's double psychology on the match. You know, you got the people watching you, cheering for you for either the story that's behind it, you know, the passion, the hard work, the perseverance, the courage, to everything that you need to get there, and through the story of the match, it's the same emotions. And also, I want the people to worry about myself.
Mm.
Like they see something happening. Oh no, is he dead? No, oh, he's okay. So it has another emotion to the match. You know, there's not too many wrestlers that can create that have the chance that they cannot create something like that where. You know, creating a reaction about their worry about the guy itself and on top of the story of the match. So it makes each story into one story.
Well, you mentioned Destro, and I feel like for a lot of people, he came out of nowhere. Like I think a lot of people hadn't seen him until you guys were paired together. How did you get connected with him?
Well, Destro did a few movies. He's got a face for movies, you know. He's got that look.
And he's also got the strongest hands in the world. He at the Arnold Classic, I don't know what year it was. He challenged every Mark Henry, Summer, like all the strongmen that you know. Like, Bill Kazmaier was there. He was the announcer for the strongman contest. And he challenged everybody. He put $10,000 on the table. Said like, all those guys are over 300 pounds. They're all like, you know, super strong. But nobody could bend a penny and a half. Nobody can bend 6 inches nails. Nobody can tear like 100 decks of cars under 10 minutes and things like that. So he's got the strongest hands in the world. So he decided to, when he saw me, he said that I was Frankenstein the way I was walking. And he was a big... He grew up with Monster, and to me, being a Monster, it kind of recreated his childhood a little bit. And so he says, I've got my Monster now, and then he's teaching me the feats of strengths, so I can have the strongest hands in pro wrestling too. So when I choke slam or do anything with my hands, you know, That's especially my hands, you know. That's where I want to. I want to have a solid grip. That's the thing that I'm working on with distro. Well, with many other things, conditionings and things like that. You know, we work out a lot.
But your character, I mean, it's a double meaning because your career has also been resurrected,
and the character exactly. As well. So it was incredible when he came out with that idea. He said, "You are Frankenstein. You have to be Frankenstein." You know, he says that's going to be the biggest thing in the world. And I said to him, I always thought I walk funny, you know, I've got a funny walk, like I walk a little bit like that, you know, like not on purpose, it's just the way I walk. So I said, you know, a lot of people have been making joke about the way I walk, and I walk like Frankenstein. So I said, I don't think he's pretty, but I'm going to go with it anyway.
It works for you.
Yeah, I don't care being ugly at this point.
So was Destro in wrestling?
He was a big fan of wrestling, but he was a big fan. He did a little bit of commentary for wrestling. He was involved a little bit with the same channel where I was working, the same TV station. I went to see him maybe 15 years ago. I wanted him to be with me, and I wanted to shoot an angle to Vince with him as my manager.
Yeah.
And he turned me down. Destro said, no, I'm not interested.
Hmm.
This guy is not about money either. He's like, he either likes it or he doesn't. I mean, he's like, the only reason I'm doing it is because I'm doing it for you, man. He said, I love Monster. I love wrestling. I love feats of strength. And we're training together, and that makes that makes him happy.
Well, you played so many different characters. Obviously, this one is, I think, at the top of the heap. But what do you think is the worst gimmick that you've had?
I really think it was the Quebecers for me, because it was like a character where it wasn't myself at all. Like, we never really won, like, clean. Like, it was always, like, some sort of a Quebec rules, like won the title by disqualification. We always got beat up. I was running on my knees. I was like going to Jacques' waist, holding up. Like, to me, it's totally not me, you know. So I think to be successful in wrestling, it's got to be an extension of yourself. It's got to be a part of yourself that it's in there, in that ring, that people are feeling that you and your character are one. You're not playing a role. You're not, you know. I was good playing that role, but I knew that wasn't a role for me. I could do fairly good, you know, but and the pirate, that's an idea that I shot to Vince, where I wanted to really emphasize the fact that I will use a negative, losing my eye at the age of 12, and turn it into a positive, where with one eye you can still, you know, do great things. And I wanted to do a lot of things, you know, with people that have light handicaps and try to be inspiring, you know, as a wrestler for them. But turned that into the Lafitte, where the great, great Jean Lafitte was my great, great grandfather, was Jean Lafitte, the famous pirate in Louisiana. And then I was not from Quebec anymore. I was from Louisiana. And it was, to me, it was like too much cartoonish. That's not what I had envisioned for that character. I really wanted to be a... it's funny to say that because I'm not human. But the fact that I'm not human is because I've been made out with different body parts from all different pro wrestlers, and I've been resurrected, and, you know, I'm that's what makes me not human. It's like the tolerance to the pain. But when I talk, the feeling and everything, that's human. That's still human. And I'm saying that because the pirate, that's something that I wanted to translate to the crowd. I wanted to translate the quality that I had, the courage that I had. Like, I remember my family being at the hospital every day for 1 month. I was laying on my back, and I was a kid that was 12 years old, and I was the one who was bringing their morale up. Don't worry, Mom, it's gonna be fine. Don't worry, Dad. Don't worry, Grandmom. You know, it's okay. It's good now. I'll be good with one eye, you know. So I wanted to, those emotions to be shown in that character of the pirate. And I wanted to show, which then they said the blindness was more the U.S. people, the Americans, that didn't appreciate what my great-great-father had done in the past for the country. And it went sideways, and that's another character that didn't really like because of that.
I think that I would have guessed it was your Impact or your TNA character.
Yeah. But it was such a short span of time.
Yeah, I guess you didn't get a chance to really get to know that character.
Yeah, no, not really. I didn't have time to put that much thought into it.
I don't know that everybody realizes that, like, you're blind on your right eye.
Yeah.
I think that maybe people think that because of this character that's just a contact you're wearing.
No,
or something.
No, it was really a big drama in my family. I got shot by one of, you know, the pickup sticks to play. You know, when you pick up sticks with different colors. Well, we ran out of pellets, and we're a bunch of kids at 12 shooting ourselves in the legs. And then once we didn't have any more pellet to put in a pellet gun, we put those sticks, and then it went through this. I was hiding behind a counter in the kitchen, and my friend, we were shooting our legs, you know, below the knees to make sure nothing would happen.
Yeah.
I think we were thinking that. I was thinking that for one. But anyways, I was on my knees, and it went through the skin, and then I do a two rounded edge. So I pulled it back out. So don't ever do that. If something happened to your eye, you put a cup over it, you leave it there, you don't touch it, you go to the hospital, they can make the surgery and remove it very gently without you making the damage. Because when I pulled all my eye out like that.
What?
Yeah, because it's a rounded edge. It went through the skin, and by reflex, I went boom, I pulled it out, and it was bleeding all over the place. And then I put I took a small towel, I wet it, and then I tell my friend, I think I'm blind. I'm looking in the mirror. No, I can see. No, I'm blind. No, I can't see. And I'm going crazy. Call my mom. There was no cell. So my mom was working. My uncle got me, and I fell unconscious on the way to the hospital.
Oh, my God.
And I woke up. I had, like, been 4 hours on the table for the surgery.
Wow.
And then I woke up, and then all the family was around me.
This is, not to make light of this, but you know the movie The Christmas Story?
No.
A Christmas Story? The kid wants a BB gun for Christmas. And they keep saying, you'll shoot your eye out, kid. That's what's going to happen. I mean, wow. But the fact that you overcame that as well.
Yeah, at a young age, I was very, very grounded, very humble, very, I grew up, you know, reading quite a lot of books and surrounded with a lot of good people. And it's just like, basically, it was like just hitting WWE. The fame, you know, that really, the traps. And, you know, like, some people never got out of it. They never get out of it. Like, Michael Jackson died. He was, like, super miserable. Like, I think Whitney Houston's the same thing. And I think For an instance, like one thing that I wanted to also prove when I came back and I make my comeback is when I saw the movie The Wrestler, I was so pissed off.
Why?
When I got out of that room, I slammed that door. That cinema.
Yeah, with Mickey Rourke.
Theater, yeah. I slammed the door. I was mad. I hated it. I said, what a bad movie for... It's only showing the bad side of the wrestling world. Mm. You don't see nothing good about it. You don't see a nice father taking care of his children. You don't see a nice family growing up happy. You don't see, you know, someone who has money, someone who has, like, good things that business had brought to them, you know, that comfort. The only thing you see is just pain and misery.
Right.
And I wanted to come back, and I wanted to make a comeback, and I wanted to reach my goal. And that movie was another incentive for me to go, well, they'll have to do another movie, but this one will be positive about the wrestling business.
Mm.
Yeah. I want a movie to be... Well, we're shooting my life in real time. Like, they're not here today, but usually at shows. And since 2017, there's a crew following me pretty much everywhere.
Wow.
So before I won the title, after I won the title, I signed a contract, after I signed a contract, and everything in between, and the good matches, and the big matches, the big main event matches, and things like that. Wow. So we got that in real time. So that's going to be a nice documentary, a two-hour documentary movie. We're shooting that for movie theaters. So,
wow.
So the bigger the story comes, the bigger the movie will be, the bigger the book will be.
And there's different parts of your story that I think relate to different people from all walks of life. And whether you're a wrestler or you are a broadcaster like myself or whatever you happen to do, I feel like people can take from your story and apply it to their own life.
Yeah, that's one of the goals too, and I think I was I'm really inspired by a lot of guys that the Impact Theory, you know.
Yeah, Tom Bellew.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Tom Bellew. Like, I really like what he does. Yeah. I learned a lot there. There's a lot of things that I already know, but just listening to it, you know, it always makes me go back in my values and what I believe in, and it reinforces all my values and all my criteria that I think that are important in life. Mm-hmm. And I think Ed Milet also is one of them.
Yeah, Ed Milet has a great show. His podcast, I listen to it all the time. There's no reason that you can't be a guest on Tom Bilyeu's show or Ed Milet's show.
That would be like something... That's been a goal for the last year to be on those shows. So hopefully that's gonna turn out to be something that's gonna happen.
Well, hopefully someone listening to this right now.
Yeah, I would be really grateful.
Is connected with Ed or Tom and can make this happen.
Yeah, and also in the same line of those two guys, I was a big fan of Oprah Winfrey, and I think she really knows how to. Get out, you know, what's essentials in life. So, yes, the achievements, yes, the job, yes, the wrestling, or you're an actor, or you're, you know, whatever field of life you might be part of.
Yep.
There's always, like, a line, you know, that is, that makes you be successful or not, I think. And I think she knows how to hit the nail on those points, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'd really like to be able to get to know her and share a little bit of my story with her. And then, because she's a lady that did inspire me a lot.
Well, I think we'd all like to get to know Oprah.
Yeah.
She
had some very interesting guests. So
I've actually interviewed Oprah once.
Oh, man. You interviewed so many big names.
I've been very fortunate, and Oprah was just so kind. And I think that was the biggest thing, is she was so kind and so present in the moment. And it's funny that, you know, I've interviewed, you know, you name it. I've interviewed every Hollywood celebrity. The bigger the star, the nicer the person. And I think that that's such an interesting thing, because most people would think it's the reverse. Most people would think the Tom Cruises, the Sandra Bullocks, the Brad Pitts of the world.
Denzel Washington.
Right. I've interviewed all these people. they've always been the absolute kindest and most present. And I think that there's a lesson to be learned from those types of people.
Yeah, yeah. So for sure, yeah. I hope to have the chance that you had and to be able to meet with them and sit down with them and be able to be asked and to be able to ask a few questions.
Well, I think the word that describes you really well is kind. You are such a kind man. And the path that you've been on is the path that you've created for yourself.
Yeah, I would. It's it's touching. It's been a lot of work, and it's very, very, this just a piece of gold, but it's in the meantime, it's very rewarding.
Sure.
And from the people, but also for my own self, you know. And that's why I feel I have to get out there and to pop this Ring of Honor territory like it never been popped before, and with not myself, but with all the great talents that we got, you know, with Marty Skrill, the villain, with Villain Enterprises, with, you know, I don't want to go with names because when you forget one, everybody right. hates you. So, but I can say we got a super talented dressing room, and you just have to look at what WWE's got right now and what AEW's got, and well, over 50% of those guys are coming from ROH.
Yeah. It's true.
And now that ROH is spending the money, is investing, mm-hmm. and is putting like more efforts into becoming like a major company, it feels like now we're back to where we were like so many years ago, where you had AWA, NWA, and WWE, WF, whatever. So we got the three major ones, and because all the other ones are brands of WWE, so it's all WWE. A Ring of Honor, All Elite Wrestling, and that's booming the ROH and to make it like number one.
Well, I want to thank you for this super enlightening conversation, and also I want to acknowledge you for never giving up on yourself and always chasing after those goals and being, I'm a super goal-driven person myself. You set those goals and you're not happy until you've accomplished them. And I think that that's something that's, you know, made you the Ring of Honor champion, just made you a champion in life.
Yeah. I think we can almost end up on this. You don't become what you want. You almost become what you are in a way that, you know, so sometimes we want to be something, but we're not totally ready for it yet.
Sure.
So, and I think sometimes you become a champion at a young age, like Mike Tyson, because from that experience, there's going to be some lessons to be learned later on. So that's why there's a different, there's an order and there's a time for different reasons, for different things. But I'm so grateful that I had it at the age that I got it. I can appreciate every moment. I can assure you that I won't go back on fall back on those traps. I'll make the best out of it, and the best in a positive way out of it. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate you.
What a conversation. What a guy. Wow. I hope you are as inspired as I am. I mean, the man won the Ring of Honor World Championship at 51 years old. He just turned 52 on December 30th. It's an incredible story of reinvention, of never giving up on yourself and believing in yourself. And if you've ever seen this man work in the last year or so, you will know that this man only has one speed, and that is full speed ahead. Take a screenshot. Tag me at Chris Van Vliet on Instagram or Twitter. Tag PCO, he's at PCO is not human. I know he'd really appreciate knowing that you're listening to this one. And also, if you're a fan of Ed Mylett or Tom Bilyeu, maybe you can, connect PCO, make his dream come true there, his goal of being on Ed Mylett's show or Tom Bilyeu's show, Impact Theory. So hey, if you're aware of those guys or you're connected with them in some sort of way, let's make this thing happen. And I can't recommend that book enough that he talked about, The Alchemist, that he talked about in this interview. Oh, man. So we're going to leave you with a quote from The Alchemist that I think is so inspiring. Almost as inspiring as this conversation with PCO itself. It's the possibility of having a dream come true that makes life interesting. I just got back from Las Vegas. I was there for the Impact Wrestling tapings, did a bunch of interviews there, still got a bunch of interviews from NWA, and we've got the infamous chest slapping, chopping. Yes, you know the story. If you follow me on Instagram, you know exactly what my chest looked like last week. It's healed up nicely. Thank you for everyone who's asked. But I took 20 chops at Tyler Breeze and Sean Spears Wrestling School, flatbacks in Apopka, Florida. My chest looks exactly how you would think it would look after 20 chops. So that video is coming up soon as well. So make sure you're subscribed on here. Make sure you're subscribed on YouTube. Oh, man, 2020. What a year this is going to be. It's the possibility of having a dream come true that makes life interesting. We'll see you soon.